Welcome to What the Health? Where anything health is fair game as we tackle the trends and bust the myths about health and wellness. Here are your hosts, Dr. Dan and Angela Toro.
And welcome to another What the Health podcast. I am Dr. Dan, here with my co-host,
Angela. Welcome back, guys. Should I just get it out of the way here? You know the drill at this point. So we're here for informational purposes only, in no way offering individualized medical advice. As always, always consult your trusted healthcare professional before making any changes to your life and health habits.
Very good. And we will be discussing a lot about life and health habits today as we are discussing generational health, not generational wealth, as so many people have come to
be focused on,
which we'll touch on.
Yes.
And how finances do play a role in your health and well-being. But generational health. So how did we come upon this topic? Because we're actually celebrating it in the office this month. So how did we come across this, and what do we want to share with our audience today?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've just been seeing a lot of people lately that, you know, kind of in our age range where, you know, they're sort of at that point where maybe parents are starting to get a little bit older, or they might be having young kids, or their kids are starting to get older. And we just see a lot of people where they're either feeling older than they should, or they're getting into the habit of sort of blaming it on their genes. So, you know, oh, well, yeah, I have that symptom, but that runs in the family.
That's
kind of the way it is, or that's just, I just feel this way because, you know, that's the way it is.
My mother had this, and so I guess I'm just getting this.
I'm just getting older, so I'm just, you know, I'm tired, and that's, you know, things like that, where we're just kind of seeing a lot more of this, you know, just sort of seeing a different perspective of how people are looking at things and how people are kind of accepting a certain fate without realizing how much control we really do have over our health and well-being.
Yeah, so many of us, and we've had these conversations before about, you know, genetics and, you know, how many people have become victims of their genes, right? They think because their parents had it, their grandparents had something, so now they're doomed to have, you know, heart disease, cancer, diabetes, arthritis, tingling and numbness, you know, whatever condition that their parents or grandparents had, they feel that they're doomed to have this. And unfortunately, what science has proven over the years is that is not the case. There's a whole field now called epigenetics, which means that really the function of your genes comes from the control and the coordination of the environment that you put your genes in. In fact, if you really want to dive into this, I mean, I first, you know, started learning about this topic, you know, over a decade ago when I was in chiropractic school. But there's a fantastic author, microbiologist, PhD, by the name of Bruce Lipton, and he wrote a book called Biology of Belief. And the whole book is around the premise of really discrediting the gene theory of, you know, your genes determine your health, determine your well-being. We just know that's not true anymore. Is there some component, some connection to your genetics and your health and well-being? Yes, there is. But there's a much stronger component of the environment that your genes are put in. So he did an experiment from the cellular basis of, they took pluripotential cells, which are stem cells. So, and these cells basically have not differentiated into any other types of cells yet. We all have these stem cells in our body. We have a lot more of them when we're younger. But we all have them and have the ability to create them throughout our life. But these stem cells don't have any specific, like they haven't become nerve or bone or muscle or digestive cells yet or skin cells. They really have the ability to differentiate or grow into anything. So he took these stem cells and put them into a couple different petri dishes, one with bone, one with muscle, one with nerves. And what he found is that the stem cells that went into the petri dish with muscle cells, what did they become? they became muscle cells. When he took those stem cells and put them into the petri dish with bone cells, they became bone cells. When he took those cells and put them into a petri dish with nerve cells, they became nerve cells. And then he actually did a final experiment and then took like cancerous or diseased cells and put the stem cells in with those, and the stem cells actually became diseased. They took on the expression of the environment that they went in. Because all those stem cells, you know, again, going back to, you know, what it is genetically, all those stem cells are exactly the same. Mm-hmm. But they ended up expressing the environment that they were in. So I think it's so important for us to discuss when we're talking about health from one generation to the next, is that you are not a victim of your parents or your grandparents or your great-grandparents. You are much more a product of the environment that you are in currently, or what you have experienced over the last several decades, which I think is important because we don't just inherit our genes, we also inherit lifestyles. You know, if our parents lived a certain way, or you know if you grow up in a household with parents who smoked, you're much more likely to smoke. If you grow up in a household that eats dinner at a certain time, or eats dinner in front of the TV, you're much more likely to do that because you've inherited a lifestyle. So I think it's important for us to understand our generational health from one to the next as a way of how can we break the cycle if we're unhappy with it, or how can we optimize the cycle if we are experiencing very good health and want to continue that on.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, is that, you know, again, a lot of people, if you're in your 30s, 40s, you're kind of in that age where you can see both directions. You can see the future, with how your parents are living and what their life's looking like as they're getting into their older years. And then you can see your children or nieces, nephews, just the young kids in your life, and you can kind of see how they're living. And so then you sort of get a blast from the past. And so you start remembering how you were raised and comparing and contrasting. So it kind of puts you in this interesting place where you're like, it's a good time to really reflect and go, okay, well, let's look at how my parents are living. Is that how I want to be? Are they, on their own, getting around, being able to do the things that they want to do, get up and down steps, get up and out of a chair, like little things like that, that, at this age we're not thinking about, but yeah. as you we talk about all the time, as you age, and if you don't take care of yourself, those things all become more difficult. So, are they having balance issues? Are they having a lot of chronic conditions? Are they on a lot of medications? What does their life look like? And are you following in those footsteps? Are you living the same? I mean, obviously you were raised by them. You can't go back and change how you were raised, but are you continuing patterns that are going to eventually lead to that road?
Yep.
And then same thing looking back, how your kids are growing up compared to how you were, are they doing the same habits? Are you teaching them good habits? Are you leading by example? Are you, like you said, are you sitting down to dinner as a family? That's probably one of the big ones I think about that you just don't see a lot anymore, with between people being busy and just with the, electronics everywhere, is this whole idea. I mean, I remember we sat down every night at dinner, and short of if somebody had a sports event or practice or something, that they couldn't be there. I mean, we were there at the table every night having that dinner. So yeah, definitely just it's a good time to really reflect and see, are you living the life that you want? Are you raising your kids to be healthy and happy and productive individuals? And are you putting yourself on a path to live and be able to live and flourish well into your older years? Or have you accepted sort of, dad's sick all the time and has a hard time getting around. That's going to be me in 30 years. And yep. Have you just sort of already mentally accepted that? Or are you doing what you need to do so that that's not the way that you're going to be? Because, again, we always say the best time to plant a tree is 20 years ago, next best time's today. Yeah. So if you're not happy with something the way it is, now's the time to change it, because if you wait another 30 years, not impossible, but it's going to be just that much harder to reverse all of those, compounding effects of an unhealthy lifestyle.
Yeah, and there's this concept of neuroplasticity, okay, and that's the ability of your nervous system to kind of rewire itself and form new patterns, new habits, new pathways. You know, you don't have like this static, like all your connections in your brain and your spinal cord, they're not like formed and they can't change. They absolutely can. And so if we think of like if a stream of water, you know, let's say is running off the side of a house, and then it starts cutting through like the concrete a little bit, or let's just say a gravel driveway, and so that stream of water starts to form. Well, now anytime it rains, anytime it's wet out, that water is going to start to follow the exact same pathway and cut further and further into the gravel driveway. That's similar to how, you know, your nervous system works. You know, pathways that are fired, you know, habits that are done, you know, repeatedly over and over and over again, those connections become more and more hardwired into the brain. It doesn't mean they can't be broken, but it becomes harder and harder and harder. And let's think about that from a habit perspective. Mm-hmm. That's why it's so difficult to break habits, unhealthy habits, and to form new ones. Because if you've done it for a long period of time, you know, a year, 5 years, a decade or more, those habits are, you know, very hardwired into your nervous system. So it becomes harder. We call it neurorigidity, okay? It becomes hard for your system to break that pattern. So it doesn't mean it's impossible, but the longer you wait, the harder it becomes to break that habit. So I think one of the most important things that we do want to say is that you have to understand that you can change it.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're not doomed or destined to get sick. We have a lot of family history, mm-hmm. Of heart disease, diabetes, cancer, Alzheimer's, dementia, like, you know, go down the list. I mean, we probably have every, you know, an aunt, uncle, grandparent, great-grandparent that has every one of those major conditions or multiple of them.
Yeah.
And it hasn't even crossed my mind that I'm doomed to get any one of those because, again, we have now, you know, uncovered and learned the truth that we're not destined for that. We can change our environment, change our health patterns, and make sure that, you know, we're not going to be destined to get that. So, and again, it's not 100%. Doesn't mean I won't necessarily get cancer or, you know, have some sort of heart disease down the road. But even if it does get to that point, you know, there are ways and methods that you can support it and get around it and healthfully overcome it. So, you know, again, it's not a death sentence anymore.
Yeah.
You know, so that's I think that's what, you know, the big thing that we're talking about here is, you know, like Angela said, you can see you have the advantage of seeing your parents and where they have gone. And, you know, do you want to continue following that path? Are you happy with, you know, the health and well-being that your parents, you know, have lived, or are, you know, you not so happy with it and you want to make changes, you know, especially for your kids, your grandkids, nieces, nephews, and help support more of a healthy life so that they can live it into the next generations.
Yeah, and I think, and you brought up, I mean, you kept talking about habits and how hard it is to break habits, and that's, you know, I think that's what's so important too, and that's really a big takeaway from this, is that it is much easier to raise healthy children than to take care of sick adults.
Yep.
Or to try to change the habits of sick adults and unhealthy adults.
Yes.
So there are definitely, and again, things are changing all the time. You know, whatever the thing we think is healthy this week, who knows? Like, you know, it's we grew up in the low fat diet craze, where again, that stuff was
high sugar, supposed, low fat.
Yeah, supposed to be healthy, and that, you know, now we're dealing with sugar addiction because of it. And I mean, again, and that's just something that's a product of our childhood and how we were raised, and it wasn't that they were doing anything wrong. It's just that was what was considered, that was the healthy stuff at that time. So again, it's about, you know, but just basic healthy habits, making sure that, you know, we did a podcast recently on listening to your body and not battling your biology. So even teaching your kids from a young age just to, again, listen to their body, that it's okay to not eat if you're not, you know, like, yeah, like there's that whole idea, finish what's on your plate and the, like, it's dinner time, so you're going to eat like that. Yeah. It's okay to just say, I'm not hungry. I'm like, it's okay to go to bed hungry. I'm probably going to get yelled at for saying it's okay to send the kid to bed hungry, but I'm not saying like, don't feed your children, but it's okay to like, not be full all the time, or to feel like to have that. So like, it's okay to recognize, you know, when are you actually need something? When are you, and when do you just want something because you want it? Yeah. When has it become a habit? And again, those habits are so much, healthy habits are so much easier learned young, and the unhealthy habits are learned young too. So it's being careful and watching are some of those one-time things turning into everyday things, and making sure that we're, I mean, because again, we're all going to have those days where it's like, fine, eat in front of the TV. It's, you know, whatever. It's been a long day. It's crazy. It's just, yeah, you know, the kitchen's a mess. Fine, eat in front of the TV. But is that becoming an everyday thing? Yeah. Is that, you know, and I think of it like brushing your teeth. You know, every adult, hopefully, shouldn't assume, but most adults don't think about, you know, just you just do it. It's, yeah. You don't think about it. It's just, in fact, if, you know, if you have one of those nights where you fall asleep without brushing your teeth, it's like first thing you think, yeah, when you wake up, you're like, oh, that was awful. And just, I remember when I was traveling to Thailand, and it was like 45 hours of travel. And it was like, yeah, at one point I'm like, I just need to go brush my teeth in the bath. Like, it was just, cause it just had been so long. And I'm like, oh, I just need to brush my teeth. We don't think anything of it. A kid would literally just never brush their teeth if they're not taught. There's nothing intuitive necessarily about brushing like that. So that's a healthy habit that's taught and learned. And there's a lot of, you know, fighting with them at first to get them to do it. But that, if taught young, they'll never think about it again. Yeah. We don't sit there and you have to, you know, fight with yourself every night. Oh, I guess I have to brush my teeth again. It's, you just do it. And so that, any healthy habit can be that way. Cause I see, you know, I work with a lot of adults obviously that are trying to make healthy changes, and a lot of people, you know, come into the gym and they're just, I mean, they do it, they're putting in the work, but they hate it. They're just like, they're, you know, and I'm sitting there, I mean, I love being in the gym. Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, that's one of my favorite places to be. So it's just, it's interesting to think about that. Cause again, it's, you know, health shouldn't feel like a chore. So if you work on these things from a young age and you find the things that you enjoy as a family, and then find the individual things, you know, what you like to do, your kids might not. Yeah. So, I mean, it's great if they do, you know, you've gotten Ethan into lifting with you, which is great. That's something you can do together. But, you know, at some point there might be a sport or something that he wants to do that you have no interest in, but you know, that's great. Let kids find what they enjoy that's going to keep them active and healthy, because if they enjoy it, it just becomes one more normal part of their routine and not something that they feel is, you know, a chore or burden to have to do.
Yeah.
I see a lot of adults where they see, you know, going to the gym is like, oh man, this is just one more thing I have to do, and not something that they're truly enjoying and really seeing and feeling the benefits of, which is a shame because there's so many benefits to exercising and being healthy, which we talk about all the time.
Well, and I think we've talked about, you know, we're talking about generational health here, but also we have to, you know, certainly take into account how culture has changed throughout the generations, because in many ways we have, you know, we have information at our fingertips. We are so blessed to be able to just pull up Google or, you know, whatever search browser you want. And it's like, hey, I want to know information on this. You know, I heard a friend, you know, say this, and, you know, my doctor said this. It's like, my good, you know, patients come into the office anymore, and it's like half the time they know better than the doctor because they've done, you know, 20 Google searches, and, you know, they're down the rabbit hole of whatever they believe their condition is. And so, you know, but with that also comes, we are not living connected to the land the way, you know, maybe three generations ago would have, you know, the settlers, you know, the Native Americans, the settlers who came over, you know, and it's like, there was no such thing as electricity yet, you know, in the, you know, early 1700s, early 1800s. It's like, there was, you know, indoor plumbing was only becoming a thing, you know, in the, you know, late 1800s, 1900s. It's like, you know, it's, so this whole concept of, you know, living off the land, you know, when you woke up and there's no electricity, you're not connected to a screen. You go outside, you gotta, you know, milk cows and, you know, clean the chickens and, you know, feed
you can
clean the chicken coop, feed
you can tell Dr. Dan really is up on his farming. He's cleaned a lot of chickens in
but
his
they're
day.
Out, they're moving around, and so, you know, so they don't have to go to the gym. Like that would be such a foreign concept. If you took someone from the 1800s and brought them to today, they'd be like, what are all these centers here?
You
know, people are on treadmills and ellipticals and they're lifting weights. It's like, you know, to them, it was like they lifted lumber to build a fence.
Exactly.
Or, you know, they moved rocks around to, you know, maybe help create, you know, some sort of a water, water reservoir or, you know, whatever the case may be. And it's like, you know, they were just strong, healthy individuals because that's what their bodies were created to do, and
that's what they used every single day.
So now we have information, we have a wealth of knowledge at our fingertips, but we don't have the culture, the lifestyle to support it. Now again, I think we're slowly transitioning back a little bit because things like, you know, sitting at a desk, people are becoming very aware of, you know, maybe I shouldn't sit at my desk all day. Maybe I get a standing desk that can go up and down. You know, there's so many people will put their laptop on a treadmill now and they'll be, you know, doing slow walking while they're taking a phone call, while they're on the computer. So they're connected that way. They get out at lunchtime and, you know, take a walk outside. And so we're kind of relearning these habits, these healthy habits that are ingrained, you know, in our genes. You know, I think in a lot of ways that, you know, the internet has become, you know, again, it can be a great tool, but a great downfall. And, you know, we're starting to kind of relearn and get reconnected back to how our bodies are supposed to function. And the more you can feed the body, we talk about this all the time, it knows how to be healthy. You know, it needs to move. It needs to have good, healthy fats. It needs to have good, healthy, you know, good healthy carbohydrates, you know, good, healthy proteins. You know, you give your body what it needs in terms of fuel and, you know, energy usage in terms of, you know, your musculoskeletal, neuromusculoskeletal system, and exercise every day, then it will be healthy. you got to give it the ingredients that it needs. So, you know, we're fighting that uphill battle of technology, but I think in a lot of ways, the wisdom of the world is, you know, we can just cross-reference anything so quickly now. You know, even when we were starting elementary school, it's like we still had to go to the library. I mean, we were just on the cusp of that generation where it was like, you know, looking up library cards and, you know, taking out a book and referencing. And, you know, now it's like, you know, oh, I got to do a book report. It's like
we would do projects with encyclopedias. Kids, do they even know what an encyclopedia is?
I don't think so. So, you know, it's about that. So taking that to the generational, how do we take where we're at and bring it to the next generation? And
I think, honestly, I think the shutdown from the pandemic made people even more aware of how important those little movements throughout the day are, because I've been talking to a lot of people and they're like, I always had a desk job, but I drove to work and then I walked into the building and I walked up a flight of steps to get to the building. And then you walk around all of a sudden it's like, I get out of bed
and go to my desk.
Some people's desk is in there. So it's like,
it's in their bed.
It's like all of a sudden I got, you know, 100 steps in the day, but, you know, and so people, again, you know, getting groceries delivered instead of going to the grocery store and walking around the grocery store. So it's like, even just in the last couple years, our lifestyle has become even more, like, we've taken away even more of those, what we call just like the, you know, the extra steps throughout the day, the physical activity steps versus the exercise steps. So I think people are becoming even more and more aware of that. And like you said, it's just awareness is key. Yeah. And then it's figuring out, okay, how do I get those steps back into my day? Because, I mean, we talk about, to be as active as our ancestors are, I mean, you have to, you know, walk 12 to 15 miles a day.
Yeah.
And again, that's just not going to happen in this day and age. No one's saying that it is, but there are, you know, if you look at your day, okay, are there times that I could be moving as opposed to, you know, doing more sitting things. Yeah. So if you have a very sedentary job, then you might want to look for your leisure time for more active things to do. And again, I'm not saying you have to go, you know, run a marathon, but, you know, get outside, go for a walk,
bike ride,
you know, anything that kind of gets you up and move, go play pickleball. That's the new thing. It's a lot of fun.
I've yet to play.
But then on the opposite, if you have a very intense job, like you were just, you know, if you're a construction worker or somebody that's doing a lot of manual labor during the day, then you might need to use your leisure time for more rest and recovery and healing. And so it's again, it's not, there's no one size fits all. Everybody wants the, what, the, tell me the, yeah, the magic the solution.
Thing? Yeah, the magic bullet. Yeah. Silver bullet. I get that a lot.
And it's like, well, again, it's about finding that balance in your day, making sure you're having the, you know, you're being active, whether that's naturally occurring in your job and your lifestyle, or whether you're kind of trying to find that and fit that in a little bit more because you have a, you know, not every job can be done moving around. It's some jobs have to be done in a desk. That's the world we live in now. So how do you, like you said, mix in the activity throughout the days? Are you able to take breaks? Are you able to walk around? Are you able to, you know, kind of slip that activity back into your day? And then again, making sure you're teaching your children that, because they're, you know, unfortunately it's, you know, schools are, some of them are doing okay and some of them are going the wrong direction, taking recess away, you know, taking gym class away. It's like, no, we need more of this. We need more. And then we wonder why kids are all over the place and can't focus. It's like, well, cause kids aren't meant to sit. No one's meant to sit and stare at a, you know, sit and be focused for 8 hours a day. And now, so again, it's just, and that's part of what I was saying, where, you know, teaching your kids to listen to their body and express what they're feeling and not feel like, you know, it's, you know, yeah, if they're feeling like they have a lot of pent up energy, let them go run around at the end of the day, get them in a sport or take them to the park. Or if you have the luxury of having a backyard, send them out, you know, that's, let them be kids. That's, they kind of naturally know what they want to do. They want to move, they want to run, they want to do that. So making sure that they have that outlet as well. Because sitting all day in school and trying to be focused for that whole time can be difficult.
Well, and that's what, you know, so you bring up a good point there with, you know, we're trying to force our kids into an artificial environment. Mm-hmm. And then what's our solution? We want to medicate them to keep them in that artificial environment rather than, you know, addressing the cause or the root of the problem, especially boys. Like, you know, boys tend to have a lot more energy. So it's like you take a boy, put them in a classroom where they have to sit for 8 hours, you know, maybe they get, you know, 20 minutes at recess and, you know, they get to change scenery 20 minutes at lunch. But it's like, you know, now they've got all this pent up energy, they can't focus. And so now they're diagnosed with hyperactivity, ADHD, because they can't focus. And so what do we want to do? We want to give them medication to help slow their brain down when really they need nature. They need to be outside. They need to be moving around.
They need to bounce. They need to run. They need to jump.
Yeah, yeah. They should be, you know, doing that 4 hours a day rather than, you know, 20 minutes. And so, you know, really getting to the root of what the health problem is. And, you know, again, one thing I think the pandemic showed us is that, you know, there are different options for education out there. I know a lot of families that decided they were going to start homeschooling their kids because they didn't like the way that, you know, schools responded and, you know, had the online learning. But there are online schools for kids who don't like the classroom environment. There's just so many options for education now that are out there. You have to find what works best for you, your kids, your family. And be able to take that, and hopefully build those healthy habits into your routine. So that's where, you know, from one generation to the next, you know, you're not just changing, you know, you're not inheriting genes and strictly, you know, doomed to whatever you get. You do inherit a lifestyle and, you know, habitual patterns that you get from your family as well. So it's really up to you on whether or not you're going to continue those those patterns or make intentional choices to break those patterns and create new healthy patterns for you and your family moving forward. One thing I talked about earlier in the episode here is that neuroplasticity versus neurorigidity. When you have a very rigid nervous system, your body is stuck, okay? So it doesn't want to break out. And so we talk about that from a chiropractic side of things is when your nervous system is rigid, it's stuck, it's not adapting, many times it needs a good adjustment where it's going to help to kind of, pattern interruption, okay? There's a whole, neuro-linguistic, idea of pattern interruption. So if someone is thinking a negative thought or something, I've heard there's examples of people, wearing a rubber band around their wrist. And if they have, a negative thought or they think something that just is off of what they're trying to create in their life, they'll say something to interrupt that, or they'll snap the rubber band to kind of interrupt that pattern. It's even disciplining a child. If a child's having a major meltdown, sometimes a tap on the butt is hey, it's a pattern interruption because their brain is literally on this vicious cycle and they can't get out of it. So you're trying to snap them out of it. But the chiropractic adjustment can be this interruption to this pattern of stuckness, of rigidness. And so, we see many times families will choose, chiropractic care as, not because they're trying to get out of pain, even though that can be very beneficial for that, but because they're trying to build new healthy patterns and a nervous system that is supple, it's plastic, it's adaptive, it's open to new patterns, it's open to new habit changes. It makes you more, able to be to adapt those new healthy patterns into your lifestyle. So, that's where, as a chiropractor, I see that all the time where, rather than being very, very rigid and trying to make changes, now you get, kids and families who have been stuck in a certain way. Now their bodies, their physiology is starting to change because their nervous systems are rewiring. They're becoming more adaptive, and now they're better able to make those habitual changes, those lifestyle changes that's going to carry through their family and hopefully into a new generation. Mm-hmm. So.
Yep. So yeah, it's never too late to make changes. There's the earlier the better, but again, it's that idea of just becoming victim to your quote unquote victim to your genes is I think the idea that everyone needs to get out of their head. You're not doomed at all, yeah. And it's just about, and again, you can do everything right, and like you said, does it mean we're never going to get sick? We're never going to have issues? No, but again, every healthy choice that you make is ultimately going to help you better be able to handle when those times come up. And ultimately, you just want to give yourself and your family the best chance possible in what is sometimes a very unhealthy world. So the more that you can, we always say that you're either going to invest in your health now or you're going to invest in your sickness later.
You'll be forced to invest in it later. Exactly.
So that's, putting the time and energy now to being healthy. And so that will give you more healthy years to live and to enjoy with you and your family. That's ultimately what we want for the families that come into our office and our life, and that's what we want for you guys.
Yeah, I think you said something that's very important that I wanted to touch on there about the you're going to get sick, right? Or much of this episode we were talking about redefining, okay, what health is and patterns are. And one thing I talk about in the book is, symptoms are a sign of, something going on in your body. Doesn't mean that it needs to be medicated or masked, but they're signals, okay, that something is going on. So, for example, it's like, let's say you're around a lot of, individuals in the gym or, at the office, and, now all of a sudden, lymph nodes start to get a little mm-hmm. bit swollen, and, maybe you feel a little bit feverish one evening and, getting a little bit of chills. And, so all of these signs or symptoms of being sick, well, it's like, when I was going through school, I started to, kind of readapt my brain to say, okay, it's not necessarily, you know, it's what society says is, oh, you're sick, but yeah, you might be labeled as sick, but your body is truly adapting in a very healthy way. Like, if your body's fighting, comes in contact with a virus, if your lymph nodes start to swell, you know, your adenoids, your tonsils, you know, all those, you know, nice glands in the back of the throat and the neck, your body gets a little feverish. That's a very healthy adaptation to an encounter with a virus. So our body is it might be deemed sick, but it's adapting in a healthy way.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about this in terms of you eat something wrong, you know, you have some food poisoning, or again, get attacked by a stomach virus. It's like, you know, a healthy response to that would be vomiting, okay, because your body is trying to get it out, or mm-hmm. having diarrhea because it's trying to flush the colon out, okay? Mm-hmm. Good, I made it through an episode to talk about poop, you know. Got to add that in there. So I think part of this discussion needs to be this idea of, you know, when we're breaking patterns, we need to reframe how we're thinking about how our bodies function. And, you know, when you have these signs, these signals, these symptoms, it doesn't mean that we need to rush off and we need to medicate it, right? I mean, that's our generation and generations before. We're taught, like, oh, your body's feverish. You know,
Tylenol.
Tylenol, ibuprofen, like, here, you know, take something to bring down the fever. It's like, wait a minute. The fever is exactly what the body needs to help fight off the virus. And, you know, again, you look at some of these, even these national organizations now, if you actually read, you know, what they recommend, you know, what many times they say, you know, a fever up to 105, 106 degrees. I think some of them even reference 107 degrees. As long as that fever is spiking and is up there for maybe 15, 20 minutes and then comes back down and it goes in this, you know, high-low pattern, that's exactly how your body and fever is supposed to function. But what do? We'll take the temperature and it's like, oh my God, it's 103 degrees, 104 degrees. We need to pop some medication, mm-hmm. You know, to bring that fever down. Well, you literally just did the antithesis, the opposite of what the body is trying to do to fight the illness. And so what do? Now, there is research showing that, you know, kids who are given antibiotics or given Tylenol or given these medications to fight the body's natural, you know, immune response, they actually have a harder time fighting infections down the road into even into adulthood. You know, and they have these hyperactive immune responses. So, again, I'm not telling you what to do or what not to do. This is, you know, with your trusted health professional. But, you know, I've had many experiences where, you know, I've never medicated my kids for a fever. Never. Okay. They've had fevers in their life. You know, my one son is 11. He's had a handful of fevers throughout his life. But I don't think he's ever had a fever longer than, you know, a 24-hour span, you know, where his temperature has been up and down, because his body recognizes what's going on. It'll send his temperature up, down, up, down, and then usually within a night, you know, it's gone the next morning, because his body fights it very effectively because it's been trained to do so. We allow it to run its course. So I think helping to reframe how we look at illness versus natural, healthy, physiological function. Like, I don't even like to call it, you know, sickness anymore. Someone's fighting a head cold, or fighting a sore throat, or, you know, they're, you know, might have a little bit of, you know, congestion in the chest or the sinus, you know, they have a stomach virus. It's like, your body is functioning exactly how it should. If it's vomiting, if it's, you know, sore, the lymph nodes are sore and swollen, you're feverish. Like, that's how the body should fight. Yeah, it might be a state of illness, but that state of illness is almost a transition or an adaptive state of health, because that's how it's supposed to function in order to fight off the virus, that immune response. So helping to reframe some of that in terms of how we think, I think, is also very important in terms of, you know, passing that off for ourselves and for the next generation of our kids and their kids. And again, breaking those, those misconceptions about what we need to do in an illness or a sickness state, or just, keep your damn hands off and just let your body run its course.
So. And that all comes back to, again, you have to be taking care of your body on a regular basis. If you're in a chronic state of inflammation and you know, your toxicity, you're not going to be able to do that. So your body's not going to be able to function that way. So that's where, again, it all comes back to that building up, that building up the generational health, building up the healthy family for yourself, for your family, having a healthy environment, you know, that's going to allow your body to react exactly the way that you just described. So you can't live in a chronic state of toxicity, which we have other podcasts on that with this, you know, the inflammation one would be a great one to listen to. We're kind of in this chronic state of inflammation anymore. And that's the problem is, you know, we can't live in that chronic state and then expect our body to do what it's designed to do, because it can't. It's an overdrive. So that's where it really comes back to that. You need to have those everyday healthy habits, and then yes, your body can do exactly that. And you know, that's what, you know, the whole book is about, the Design to Heal book. If you haven't had one, grab one next time you're in the office, or you can request a copy online. But it's, you know, ultimately that is, you know, we say it all the time, if you take care of your body, it will take care of you. And that's, at the end of the day, that's what it's about. It's not always easy, but it really does. You know, if you put in the time and effort, just like anything, if you put in the time and effort, it becomes easier and it becomes very much well worth it. So.
Yeah. Well, so one final thought on that with the toxicity thing is that, you know, we're talking about generational health. And so we have to talk about, like, okay, you know, the procreation side of things. Okay. Having kids. And so let's, you know, look at this in terms of, you know, our, you know, sperm and egg cells. Well, those are a part of our reproductive health and well-being. Well, if you have, you know, a man or woman who are toxic in their, you know, in their body, either mentally, emotionally, or, you know, really from an inflammatory standpoint, first of all, it can become very hard to get pregnant. Infertility is, you know, significantly on the rise. So again, our bodies, you know, our physiology is trying to tell us something that, hey, you're not healthy enough to procreate, to support.
Which again is exactly what your body's designed to do.
Exactly.
To stop reproduction if it thinks you're in a dangerous or environment where you're not going to be able to support the child.
Yes. And please understand, we're not trying to be, because I know that reproduction can be an extremely emotional, you know, time. So I'm not trying to just tell you that, you know, oh, something that you did is wrong.
No, we're saying our lifestyle, our generation.
Yeah, yes. Our culture. Yes. Under this state of stress. Again, we're in an environment that, you know, we're not natural, you know, being attached to screens and, you know, our food supply. We had this conversation last night at a family event. That it's just like, you know, our food supply is not what it was several generations ago. We're not walking outside and picking food from our garden, although people are trying to, you know, plant more gardens and stuff. I'm hearing more about that. But, you know, let's look at this. If our, you know, if you have a man and woman come together and, you know, you have egg cell, sperm cell that are not, you know, that, and even if they do maybe have the ability to conceive, and move into and have a pregnancy, you could, you know, there is research showing that the health of mom and dad perinatally, okay, in and around the pregnancy significantly impacts the health of the child, you know, even to the point of, you know, mental, emotional health, the point of gut health. Okay. A lot of times that bacteria that transfers from mom in the birth process, from, you know, her vagina and anus when, you know, she's birthing her child, that bacteria that passes from her to the kid, to her child, that has a big impact on then the child's gut health and, you know, their health moving forward. So there's this whole, you know, area of study now and clinical work in helping moms and dads be as healthy as possible even before they even start to consider having children, because, you know, leading up to conceiving has a big impact. And that's that whole epigenetic concept of, you know, genes turn on and off based on the environment they're put in. Mm-hmm. So if you can get mom and dad as healthy as possible and then, you know, they end up conceiving receiving having a child, then that child is going to be much better off, you know, statistically in terms of their health and well-being moving forward. But again, nothing is doomed one way or another. Yeah. So, you know, regardless of where you're at, you can't change the past, but you can change where you're at and moving forward. So, you know, everything is adaptable. Everything has the ability to improve if you put the, you know, the time, energy, and effort into learning what you can do and then applying it on a, you know, on a individual and, you know, family basis. So, so that's our talk on generational health. I you know, hope that your generation and the next lives in health. And if you are looking for more ways on how to get healthy and stay healthy, you can check out our podcasts that are all lined up. You can check out our website, Turo, T-U-R-O, familychiropractic.com. And with that, anything else?
No, I think that was a good one. So hopefully you guys found something helpful. You can always reach out with questions. If you are a patient, remember that, you know, working on those lifestyle changes is part of what I do as well. So if you kind of feel stuck, don't know what to do, feel like you're kind of in that pattern of unhealthy habits and are looking to make those changes, always feel free to reach out to me, make an appointment. We can work on that as well. So.
Absolutely. And I hope after listening, you don't wait a generation to come listen again. So we'll see you next time.
All right. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
Take care.
You've been listening to What the Health with Dr. Dan and Angela Turo, brought to you by Turo Family Chiropractic. To learn more about the resources mentioned on today's show or listen to past episodes, visit www.whatthehealth.world.